that.
Nomar Garcia Parra.
Did it work?
Did you hear me?
I heard no claps.
Oh. Did you hear me announce who
I
was?
I heard yes. Nomar.
Okay. All right. Good. All right.
don't take our lack of laughter as a any sort of judgment.
Surely you didn't hear me give a shout out to a human who is meaningful to all of us.
A very important person.
Yep. Very important person in my life. He's at my wedding.
Oh. Sorry, I need to jump in here for a second.
Laz is there. He remembers.
Fact, yeah. Fact check here. Nomar Garcia-Parra was not at the wedding.
What?
Wait a minute. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Yeah. Laz, it was a whole thing. He came out. And then he gave a speech. Do you remember the speech? Quote from it. You remember.
Oh, yeah. It was right after your dad.
Yeah, uh-huh. And he said what?
Yeah, I mean, it was all the things about his love for Montana.
Yeah.
Growing up there.
Yeah.
Everything. It was just, it was beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, you're forgetting the part where he said, Christian, you are a hero to me.
My personal inspiration. I remember it now.
Exactly. Personal inspiration, you know, biological father of my child.
That's a controversial moment in the wedding, but
yeah, don't you remember that? I mean, yeah,
now
people...
it's all coming back. It's all coming back. A lot of people left after that.
Yeah, exactly.
From the bride's family, but yeah.
I mean, the real family members stayed. Oh God, what are we talking about today? Hello, hey, what's the name of our episode? What's the name of our show today?
I don't think we'll know until it's over, probably.
Oh, but what are we supposed to welcome people to?
Oh, the Dick Show.
The Dick Show.
I hate this name already.
Right.
I was going to go for, what was it, exercise-induced asthma? Oh, wait, that's
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
E-I-A.
Plus Dick.
E-I-A-D.
No. You can only say plus Dick. You can't abbreviate it.
Plus D.
Plus D. What are you guys going to talk about today? What are you guys... I've had this list, and I added something to it, and I realized it was like several parts, and I was like, slow down, partner. Why do I do it anyway? But I got some.
Yeah, I got one, at least. Like before I give one, though, I just want to continue one thing that we were saying right before, which was I played a basketball game with Emilio. The reason I think I might have like either lung damage or asthma was a basketball game with Emilio and his buddies, which like in my world is like, oh, yeah, like, you know, we're a bunch of, I don't know, I guess we were like 20, late 20-year-old, like just people who don't really play basketball getting together at the... Getting together at the park.
Just a fun, casual time.
Shooting around
just
a little
bit. Just a bunch of amateurs.
So I get there, and I don't know what your college friends did in, like, playing basketball, like, daily, weekly, whatever it was. But there was, like, 15 to 20 people there. They were playing full court basketball.
Every single
one of them knew all the... There was, like, they were working like a team. Like,
oh, my God.
It was, like, a pickup game. And they were dribbling between their legs, like doing like these like layups and stuff. And I tried to join the game, and I did. I mean, I joined the game, and like,
did
first
you know
of all, I was awful.
Ahead, like, had you seen them playing and thought, yeah, I could do this? Like, what?
No. Oh, it was like, because okay. I had played with Emilio a few times. Just like we'd gone Emilio to like a little basketball court near your house or something, or near one of your friends' houses.
We went to Somerville one time near your place.
Yeah, and we would just shoot around, and like, you know, your friends were pretty decent, but like I didn't actually see them play in a game situation. So I just figured they were mostly like me. But, like, they all knew what they were doing, and they were just, like, running up and down the court, like, mad. I played for about, I would say probably like 5 to 10 minutes, and I was wiped out, and I sat on the bench, and I couldn't get off the bench because I was, my body had like shut down and my lungs were burning. And I was like, I think there might be something wrong with my lungs. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure how I'm going to stand after this.
Oh, that's
so that's
so
how
good.
That's why I think I might have that.
Oh,
that's great. Geez. Anyway,
that's kind of a high bar to set, though. Like, for maybe I have exercise-induced asthma. Like, they're very
a
good.
Full court
so you're
game
less
of basketball.
Than very good.
I know,
what's
but
that?
Like Emilio, like I don't know. I just like
I was playing.
We used to play like sports together.
I played the whole time. I mean,
I played full court.
You literally
all day.
Did. You play full court like it was nothing, and that's why I was like, "What is going on here? Like, we're not so different, you and I." In my head,
or but, so you thought.
Yeah, so I thought I was wrong.
I did. Widens
after college. I did play a lot of full court basketball, just pickup games.
A lot of full court. Wow. Full court pickup games. I never even heard the term before I played in that game. Like, I always just shot around or like played these little games. So.
Oh my God.
It's my favorite kind of basketball. Full court is the best. I love full court.
I mean, it was incredible. Like it's totally different. And yeah. I had really never played that except when, you know, me and you played on that Mormon basketball league.
Oh my God. The Mormon league. We should talk about the Mormon league.
What?
You don't remember that me and Emilio played in a Mormon basketball league?
Christian, this is very important.
Oh my God, what is this? Is this like the time that you guys went and saw that jazz musician or something? Like, yeah. You guys did it together.
Oh my
Everybody
goodness.
Important
we didn't
was there.
Invite Emilio to, or we didn't invite Christian to the Mormon league. Oh man.
Christian,
now I
what
feel bad.
The hell?
I
should have been there.
What? Please talk about. I mean, do you want to talk about this? But like,
I think we should cover
briefly.
It pretty quickly.
Yeah. Okay, please talk about it.
Well, we have a good friend who is Mormon, or I guess maybe was Mormon. I don't know if he still practices or whatever. But his family was Mormon, and he was like, "Hey, you know, my church." Is part of a Mormon basketball league where we play other Mormon churches in basketball. Do you guys want to join us
and
pretend
as two
to be
other
Mormon?
People, as two other people who are also asked all the time if we play basketball.
You guys
would
probably
like...
just like, hey, yeah.
How Mormon do we need to be in this situation?
Yeah. So we were...
Well,
we were...
I thought you were going to say, how Mormon are they?
Well, we were technically like ringers, you know. Not that we were great at basketball, but we weren't
the
Mormon.
Worst ringers ever.
Yeah, but we weren't Mormon. We were very tall.
Yep.
The Mormon basketball league was hilarious because these kids were like super athletic, and like this is my memory, Laz. You tell me what you remember. I remember these kids being like very athletic and fairly good at basketball. And they would come down the court and they would like bump into you and like take a layup. And then they'd be like, oh, sorry about that. Sorry about that. Like, they were like so nice about it.
Yeah, it was a very friendly league. But my other recollection of it was that we got beat like really bad.
Yeah, we were terrible.
I keep kind of thinking I can play basketball. I think this has happened like many times over the years because when I'm just by myself.
Two stories already.
Yeah, well, when I'm just by myself, you know, I dribble around and like my shooting is decent and I can usually, you know, but it's like there's nobody guarding you. It's not there's nothing real about that situation where you're just standing there shooting. And so when I get into a game situation, just like I'm just like I'm panicking, I'm throwing the ball to nobody. I'm like shooting when I shouldn't be shooting. I'm doing like hook shots. I'm like I'm pretty sure I can dunk and I just like cannot dunk. Like, everything's just going wrong. And it's happened so many times in my life where I'm like, hey, I can do this basketball. I can just like get into this game. And then I just completely embarrass myself.
It's so good. I'm imagining you, Laz, like practicing by yourself and you're like, you know, it's like dark and you're on a court and you're sort of like, you're dribbling around and you're like, the crowd is going wild. They can't believe this kid. Where did he even come from? He shoots. He misses. But he gets the layup after a couple more shots. He's amazing. The crowd goes wild.
Wow, just an open lane. How did he do that? Just found the spot.
The greatest since Jordan. Am I good? Yeah, I'm good.
So good.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
All right. So who wants to go? Who wants to do a real topic first?
Oh boy.
Let me do mine.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about my trip to Japan, but
which is a pretty good topic.
It's a great topic. But something unprecedented just happened in my D&D game.
Oh wow, we got to hear it.
And right. I need to tell you about it.
We got to hear it.
So I've been playing this character who is a barbarian who has the ability to sort of like morph into an animal kind of, or has some animal qualities like claws and teeth and things when they go into a rage, right? This is one of the
cool.
barbarian things.
Yep.
In the book.
What do they call it? Archetype?
Yeah, archetype. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or subclass Path. Or whatever. Mm. So I've been playing this character and my sort of, you know, my purpose, other than the main purpose of the game, has been to figure out why I have this weird skill and like where this comes from. And I've been like searching and searching, and every time we get into a situation, I'm like, oh, you know, hey, weird witch lady who we're fighting, do you happen to know why I turn into an animal? Right? Like, you know, I'm always sort of like asking this question independently of the rest of the group. No answers. Never get any conclusion. Today, we have been transported to the Feywild. We're in the, you know, the realm of fairies. We've, you know, fought a bunch of weird goose creatures and like these werewolf things, and then we make it to the court of the spring, the princess of spring,
okay,
whose court is basically just a giant orgy.
Ooh.
And we're talking to her and we're trying to get her to let her brother, the Summer King, return to this realm, because otherwise he's going to destroy our world.
Mm.
And she goes and she looks at each of us in turn, and one by one she's like, oh, you're so-and-so. Oh, I recognize you. Oh, I've seen you before, whatever. And then she looks at me and she goes, welcome back.
Oh! Yeah!
And she's like, you are the changeling that we sent to this other city when you were a baby.
Whoa.
I molded your face to look like this. And then she points at this guy in the crowd. She's like, the knight protector or whatever, come forward. And this guy in full armor comes forward and he takes off his helmet and his face is my face. And
wow,
he is the human version of me that was taken from my world, switched with me at birth.
Oh,
and she says, you have the choice. I won't help you unless you decide to stay in this realm for 1 year. And I will let you change places with the person who switched places with you at birth, this knight protector. And my character has to think it through, whatever. We have a little while. I spend the night thinking about it. I talk to the rest of the party. In the morning, I go and I say, okay, yes, I will stay here. Learn about my heritage. This is my whole purpose. So this is what I've wanted to do this whole time. And the DM just says, all right, give me your character sheet. And he hands me a completely new character sheet and takes my character sheet. And now, moving forward, I'm playing a completely different character.
Whoa.
It's such a cool twist. I'm so excited about it. So I have this I have this paladin character now that I'm going to start playing next session.
Oh.
It's just unreal.
That's crazy.
It is a really cool move. And I'm like telling him, I'm like to our DM, I'm like, this is unheard of. I've never seen anything like this before in a game. And he's like, I've never done anything like this before, and I've been playing for 40 years. And I'm like, holy shit, man. This is so cool. I can't believe I got to do this. So I'm very excited about this.
That's cool. Is that in your real life game? This is like the nice.
Yeah, this is the in-person game with my neighbor.
Yeah.
So I get to figure out who this new character is, and I got to figure out like a voice and everything. I think he's going to sound like Jason Statham, maybe. And
wait, give us your Jason Statham.
He's like, right, right, guys, we've got to fight this giant goose now.
That's good.
Nice.
Oh, that's fun.
Giant goose.
Yeah, we fought a six-headed goose last session, so that's it's canon, okay?
Yeah. Nice.
But yeah, it's really cool. It's a really cool moment, and I'm excited, and oh man, I'm just glad.
How fun.
I was worried you were gonna say he was gonna rip up your old sheet.
I know. I thought he might tear it in half.
He might.
It's gone. You no longer have control of it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Is like, as a player in these games, right? We all have played in games, and you get attached to your character, right? And you're developing them as the story goes. You're thinking about what they're doing, and I've been pursuing this angle, and then to actually get offered like answers to this big question that I've had. And then to be able to say, like, yeah, I'm going to take that, but that means I have to stop playing this character. It's just like, you know, out of game, it's just such an interesting concept to just, like, say goodbye to a character mid-campaign, right?
Like, yeah, man.
It's like he broke the most solemn promise of the DM. But in a way that worked.
I love it. I love it. And it fits with the story really well. So I've really been in this game. I've been really trying to play along, right? Like there's been times where my character has had to do some really dumb shit because he got enchanted or like whatever, you know, whatever the situation was. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to try to roll with it. I'm not going to like try to resist where the story is taking us. And this was like the ultimate version of that. And it's like,
yeah, man.
I'm going to have to give this guy up now. That was very cool. Huh.
Fascinating.
Nice.
But yeah, that's all I got. Oh, Japan was cool too.
Yeah. Oh man. I mean, what was your at least give us your
10,000 mile view.
Well, I was gonna say like your most hilarious moment.
Hilarious.
Give us your most hilarious moment.
You did send I forget if it was to us or to where you sent it, but you did send a bunch of pictures of trying to fit through the door frames in a couple different spots.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Those were pretty good. That was Kyoto, I think you said, right?
Yeah, we stayed in like sort of a traditional Japanese house in Kyoto, and yeah, the door frames come up to about my mouth.
Oh my god!
So I was ducking through all these doors. So I have all these pictures of me, like with my head against the door frame.
The final one just says him with the bandaged head, just blood coming up.
Yeah, it's great.
It's good.
Oh man.
Yeah, I don't know what was the most hilarious moment. I probably when we were getting on this subway, right? We took the trains everywhere, right? That's how you get around.
Mm-hmm.
And they get really packed. And, you know, the train runs like every 3 minutes, but like people just squeeze the fuck in there. Everybody rides the train.
Mm-hmm.
So I get on this train and I'm basically hanging out of the train car. You know, I'm like almost not fitting in. And I just squeeze myself in as the doors are starting to close. And then this old woman rushes up and blocks the door and puts her forearm into my back and shoves me forward like 12 inches. And I have to smush these people in front of me because she's pushing on my back and she just squeezes herself into the train and then the doors close. And so the sound you're making is amazing. She must have been like 70 years old. She just shoved me into this train.
So are you squishing your wife and kid? Like, are you like being pushed into them or just into random people?
They were sort of off to the side. So I was just squishing another old lady in front of me. But this is all normal.
This guy.
Yeah. The funny thing is that like everyone, right? So Japan, right? Culture, it's like people are very quiet and polite in general in public. So no, this is all happening silently. Right.
Wow.
No one is like, you know, and we come from fucking Boston where you ride the train and everyone's bitching and like, hey, don't fucking touch me, kid. Like, and you're like, you know, I'm just like smushed into this lady in front of me And she's like looking at me, and I'm like, and I like no one's saying a word, and we just squeeze in there. And then when the lady has to get off, the doors open on the other side of the train, of course. So she pushes me out of the way and pushes her way around me.
Wow.
She's like 4 feet tall. It's just amazing.
Oh, that's good.
That is pretty fantastic. It's so interesting to think about, like, taking up people's immediate space so, like, completely. Like, you're just crammed in up against multiple people, and everybody is up against multiple people.
Yeah.
And they're just like, all right, we're doing this.
Yep. Yeah, everyone's just like dick to ass in the train car. Like,
are they not a culture that has like a personal space kind of like a bubble? Like, culturally, is that not like something they have?
I don't know. Not on the train for sure. I don't know. That's a good question. It seemed like people were okay with being crammed into tight places in general. A lot of the restaurants that you go to are like 7 seats, you know, at a tiny bar, and you're just squished in with other people. Probably my biggest takeaway from the trip overall was like how much I have lost the sort of city edge that I used to have in Boston, where I used to navigate cities and Boston very easily, like crowds of people, like move quickly, right? You don't engage, you just move, keep it moving, and you don't talk to people, and you find sort of have this your guard up a little bit. And living in California for the past like 10 years now, basically, that has I've completely lost that. And so the first 2 days in Tokyo, I'm like letting people walk in front of me, right? Like, you know, if there's a crowd on the sidewalk, I'm like, oh yeah, no, you go. And you will never get to go if you do that. So very quickly I learned, I recovered this sense that I used to have in Boston of like, I need to fucking keep moving, move quickly, get in there, do your thing, do what you need to do. Like, and it was like, I remember this. This is like an old friend, like coming back to me. I was like, oh, I like it. I actually like this feeling. And I like have my edge back a little bit. And like, you know, don't push me, old lady. Like, I'll fucking, you know, like.
I don't know if you guys, so funny.
Have you felt that at all, Christian? Like now being, or you two lads, I guess, sort of being away from like the city.
I've barely been back, so it's hard for me to say. Like, I mean, every now and then I do go into Boston, and then I'm like, I feel like I'm kind of in the same boat as I was, but I also like, I'm just not really navigating it that much. So I don't really have to like, you know, I'm just doing like, I'm taking the T, which is, you know, it's not like I'm in a foreign country or in a really busy place. So it does feel pretty familiar still.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. 'Cause you are, I mean, pretty rural. Now,
yeah, like, I mean, it's almost 10 years
Northeast. Yeah,
yeah,
man, almost 10 years. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's about eight years. Yeah,
wow. Yeah, for me, let me think. The biggest city we were most recently in was Montreal,
But they're so polite there.
Well. I don't know if you're being facetious or not, but I...
That's just
they're French, too, right? So, no, but it's not the French stereotype. That's the Canadian stereotype. So with Montreal, you might have...
Well, that's the thing. So I'm not sure if you're... Yeah, that's why I don't know. Because of the Frenchness, where you'd assume rude, but Canadianness, where you assume nice. I mean, it was... It just... I don't know. But I... What was I thinking? I do recall... Where the heck was I recently?
I mean, you were traveling abroad, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, but not...
What about, like, Sri Lanka?
Oh, man. Jesus. being in Sri Lanka, and we were in... The biggest city we went to was maybe Kandy? but it's one of those cities where it's just like there are just people everywhere constantly. Mm. And as you have experienced, I'm sure, well, you guys have both experienced, you know, traffic is like, it moves like it does in India.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, you know, it's chaos.
Yeah.
And terrifying. And there are people everywhere. It's funny because Sri Lanka doesn't have like a huge population, but it's got, you know, these couple population centers that are quite large and quite populous, and it's pretty intense. I remember being driven around in an Uber in Boston a couple years back, and the Uber driver was telling me about like these new neighborhoods in Boston that have blown up and stuff like that, and I started to feel like the place that I'm from was unfamiliar. So I don't know if that's exactly the same thing that you're talking about, Emilio, but it at least there's an unfamiliar feeling, which was sort of surprising.
Yeah. And you're also like, I've had this experience where when I lived there, it was pre-Uber days. Actually unusual for me. It feels very different. A couple times when I've like taken an Uber around in the Boston area, it that in and of itself feels strange to me.
Yeah, that was on the way back from the airport and the trains were closed.
Yeah.
I was just flying in and I was heading to my mom's place and the trains were closed. And so that was the only way. And it was just so weird. You're right though. Like I know it by public transportation, not by.
Yeah. It somehow feels different doing it like that. But I think Emilio, I think like that feeling of the edge that is needed. I've had that a few times where I've like gone to New York, like New York City. And there was a period in my life where I was going there quite a bit and it started to feel a little more natural to me. Then there's been other times where it's just been a long time and I'm like not exactly overwhelmed, but not comfortable. Like not just like, you know, yeah, there's something about that thing that you have after you've just kind of like been in a place for a while where you're just kind of like head down, no distractions. You're just doing your thing. And it is different. And I don't know whether it's exactly you find yourself looking up like the typical kind of thing, but there's something like that that happens in a more minor way, or you just feel not quite it's not quite as liquid or something.
What I found myself doing in Tokyo the first couple of days was like what I do in San Diego, which is like when I pass somebody in the street, I make eye contact, I nod at them, I say hello. People in fucking Tokyo are like, what? They're like nothing. They don't look at you because you don't fucking do that. And you wouldn't do that in Boston either.
No. Yeah, that's an unusual thing.
You do it here though.
In Missoula, I bet, right? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Out here too, same thing. If I pass somebody on the street, even if a complete stranger, I'm just like, yep, give them a head nod, hello, like good morning, whatever. Like,
yeah.
And that is outrageous to do in a city environment, Christian. Come on.
That is, man. But I would, I give the nod. That's what I do in the city.
Every now and then, yeah. When it somehow seems appropriate, which is not all the time in my experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the thing I had to let go of early on. The first couple of days I was doing that shit and people were like, completely just ignoring me, and I'm like, why am I doing that? Stop trying to like be friendly with people. They don't care.
they don't like that.
They're busy, they're trying to get to their thing, like, and also I need to move faster because I'm moving way too slow. This crowd,
there's no time to be saying hello to people.
No, they gotta keep it moving. Like, why are you pausing at all? Like, get out of the way, idiot.
Oh man. Were you having an enjoyable time towering over everyone?
That was pretty nice, yeah. Yeah, but there's some photos.
You're the size of three Japanese people.
three small Japanese men fit inside of my coat. We went to this well known area called Shibuya, which is the sort of the there's like a big crosswalk there where all these people like cross at once, and it's been in movies and pictures and stuff, right? You just see like hundreds of people crossing this one major street at a moment. And so we crossed through there, and you know, my wife took a video of me. You know, she walked behind me. I didn't know she was doing this, but she walked behind me with the camera filming, and I'm just this giant, like, weaving my way through this crowd of tiny Japanese people. It's great.
Nice. That's good.
I'm just imagining that this entire time, Emilio, you have in fact been three small Japanese men in a big trench coat. Could it be?
Oh, Ohio Gozaimasu.
Could it be? He has always that been that. Oh up. My God.
What a twist.
We never knew. We never knew.
You have three character sheets.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was definitely, the tallest person in almost every place I went to who wasn't like a tourist from somewhere else. Yeah.
I mean, that's true most places though, but it's just probably more extreme now.
Yeah. I felt it and it was nice. I liked it. And I I leaned into it, goddammit. I usually don't, you know, sort of lean into my height very much. I feel like I want to feel smaller and I want to sort of make people feel comfortable. But it actually worked really well for me in Tokyo where, you know, once I kind of realized, okay, I don't need to be friendly. I don't need to be nice. People don't give a shit about that. I actually want to be a little standoffish so people don't fucking approach me. And so I started walking around like, you know, chest out, sort of, like, don't talk to me. And like, and also doing that in a way to kind of protect, you know, my wife and child who were walking behind me, where like, okay, no one's going to fuck with us because like there's this giant dude walking around with an attitude. And it worked. Nobody approached us. Nobody said shit to us. Like, I've heard stories.
Did you expect? Oh yeah. What did you expect as far as people approaching you or hearing or people saying things?
Well, I've heard stories of like, you know, foreigners in Japan, like getting, you know, yelled at or just talked to or approached by people to take photos or just all kinds of shit. Right. And I was like, I don't want to deal with any of that. I don't want anybody talking to me. So I put on this kind of front of like, hey, don't fucking bother me. And it seemed to work. Nobody, you know, nobody came up to us. And then, you know, even a friend of ours was saying that, like, when he was there recently, a lot of people came up to him. And he's even bigger than me. but he's also, you know, maybe more sort of, you know, not so standoffish in his demeanor. Mm. So, yeah, he said people came up to him, were, like, taking pictures with him and, like, talking to him all the time.
Funny. Yeah.
And I don't want that. I don't want that. I had that when I was in India. You know, as a teenager visiting, that shit happened to me. I hate that shit. And people would be like, they just come to me like, hey, Michael Jordan. And I'm like, fuck off. Like,
that is so funny. We had a family come up to us in Sri Lanka when we were on a beach, a local family come up. And it was like, I think this was in a Muslim area of Sri Lanka. And this family was like several children and the girls were in pretty modest wear. And they just came up to us and wanted to take a picture with us. And so we were like, okay. And they wanted, we weren't speaking the same language. At one point, one of these teenage girls, like hands, she's like gesturing to hand her cell phone to Tiffany. And Tiffany takes it and is like, oh, you want me to take a picture of you? They're like, I'm like, no, they like want you in the picture.
Yeah. Like, you are like, huh? you are the focus here.
Yes. Yeah. It was pretty weird.
Yeah. I didn't want that. I didn't want to be in anyone's photos, goddammit.
Yeah. I don't mind it.
I'm sure you were in a lot of photos.
That's probably true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just not
but nobody asked
so
me.
Obvious. No, yeah, there we go. Yeah, that's better.
That's you know. Okay, this is my last thing about Japan, and then one of you guys should take a topic. The thing that really was annoying is the fucking influencers are everywhere, and they take up so much goddamn space.
Oh.
And like, you know, we're at this beautiful museum. We're enjoying these exhibits, and these influencers are like setting up tripods and shit in the middle of the exhibit so they can like do weird poses in front of shit. Or like we're at this like bamboo forest that's supposed to be serene and peaceful, and there's a billion people there, and these influencers are like blocking the entire road so they can like set up a camera, and like three or four of them side by side like do some fucking yoga bullshit, and like it's just like god damn it, like it's so frustrating. And
that's weird.
It is. It's really weird and like selfish and just like uncomfortable. And you know, for the most part you can ignore them, but like it sort of just blocks the flow of everything and makes it like really stupid. And yeah, so that's pissing me off.
So that's like, that's an entire world that I feel like I have completely missed. And I hear so much about, not even just participating, but even like witnessing, because I'm not in the city anymore, or I'm not like in tourist locations recently. But like, I don't think I've really seen in, but I, like, I hear about the set, and obviously like see, you know, people's Instagram posts at all these different places, like doing these different things. And I've just like, it's a whole world. Now there's like TV shows about influencers, and like, it's this, it feels like an entire subculture that somehow has managed to like evade, like, it's like they don't exist in real life because I've never seen them, but it's like I know they're everywhere, and I hear about them, you know, from like you just now, but like, it's like, I still have yet to kind of like witness the act of being an influencer in places.
This was my first time experiencing it to this degree, where like, I was like, holy shit, they're really doing this. They're really like at this temple, this historic temple, like setting up a tripod, blocking the fucking road so they can like, you know, and they'll do 27 fucking poses. And then they're all like the same shit, but they're like slightly different. And then they stand in the middle of the street and check the camera, and then they set it up again. They get lights out, and they do more poses. And it's like, wow, this is not your fucking photo shoot. Like, this is everyone's space to like, you know. And there's a lot of people just taking pictures, right? Like, most of the tourists are doing the tourist thing. They're taking pictures of themselves. They're, you know, taking a selfie, or they're smiling, or they're taking a picture of their girlfriend in front of the temple or whatever. And that's fine. But like, people just like monopolize the space in this really, like, really selfish way that drives me crazy. It was so frustrating. But yeah, I hadn't seen that. You know, I've also, you know, of course, we've all heard about and like seen this online for years now. But like, yeah, going out and actually seeing it in public, it's so annoying. It's so goddamn annoying.
Yeah, that seems horrible. And did you know that? Maybe you went there. There's like this place in Kyoto that is like an old town. Like, they live in, it's like this section of Kyoto, and there, it's this very like traditional section, and like there aren't cars there and stuff like this. Do you know about this place?
I don't think we went to that part.
Okay.
Maybe we may have walked through it. We went to several sort of old, we went to an area like that sounds like that.
Okay. Well, so very recently, like within the past month or three, they banned tourists from going into that space.
I heard about that.
Did you hear about it?
I heard about this at other places in Japan.
Yes. Yeah. Well, because of like people being rude and whatnot, and usually it's like social media influencer types who are just like doing stupid shit. And they're sick of it, and so they're not. They're like blocking tourists from certain areas.
Good,
yeah.
Yes, yes. Fuck them.
Yeah, really. Seriously, absolutely God. Outrageous.
Let me be the first to shake my fist in no particular direction and glare
at the youth.
Yes, yes. Wherever they may be.
The thing is, the people that I saw were not all young people.
Yeah, actually, it's not really the youth.
Oh, no.
There were plenty of people our mix, age and older doing this bullshit.
Oh, Jesus.
Too.
Age with dignity, people.
I mean, it was embarrassing. The best part was, like, my son, every time he saw this, he was like, I'm going to get in those pictures. And he would like nice. Creep in the background nice. And like make goofy yes. faces at them.
That's great. Good for him.
Yeah, it was good. But then you know what happens when you do that? They stop, they check the camera, they see that the shot wasn't perfect and they do it again. And it's like, God damn it. Just move. We have to shove them out of the way. Oh, like,
my God. All right. Well, Laz, you got one or should I go?
I got one. It feels like a pretty big departure at this point.
Yeah, mine's a departure too. So I think we can be
departure-ous. Departure.
All right. So this is one of those topics that I have like way too much to talk to, like say. So I'm trying to figure out how to like keep it brief. But
it's My Little Pony. Yes, we know, Laz. We fucking know. That
relates,
Jesus.
That relates to Japanese culture in a way.
Always with the My Little
the Pony.
Pony
MLP. I know.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. You're a brony. We all know.
You're a brony.
Jabroni. Okay. So I am. I think my biggest question with this is I've been thinking about stuff, like having too much stuff.
Material stuff.
Material stuff and. But like the day-to-day, yeah, the day-to-day impacts. And like, I guess my first question is like, where are you guys at with that? And my second question is like, what's your technique for getting rid of stuff?
Like, I love this topic.
So like, yes, and to me, like this is kind of a huge topic because I think about this like all the time now, but like, I think those are sort of the main, you know, questions. That's like a background question.
This is very related to Japanese culture.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. That's very minimalist there, right?
Yep.
That's I've actually been reading a couple books, and the most like Japanese stuff is sort of the number one in that realm.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
The main one being awful. I think the I really don't like the condo stuff. But anyway,
you know, she redacted or whatever. She took back a lot of her shit because she was like, oh, this is not realistic.
It also I don't think it works, but okay. So anyway, where are you guys with that stuff and what's your technique, I guess?
Go, Christian.
Okay. Well, I actually do not acquire a lot of things, for myself with basically one exception. Like you two fucking nerds, I am also a nerd. And most of the things that I care about are contained in a box. And that box allows me to look at videos and movies and, you know, whatever, right? Like, and talk to you guys. So, like, my acquisitions occur in that, you know, digital space primarily. Everything else is like, I could barely care. However, the exception is with books, and I, not too long ago, within the past year, did a major sort of like going through every single one of my books and deciding what I was keeping and what I was giving to the used bookstore and all that kind of thing. And, you know, some of the stuff just made it into local, tiny libraries, which, by the way, what a lovely thing.
Yep.
But so even after that, you know, I'm continuing to acquire them, and I've tried to have one rule for acquiring a book, and that is I only acquire it if I have read it and enjoyed it. And usually I'm getting ebooks for my Kindle. So I don't like have the book. And so that allows me to be a little more discerning. Like, there's this layer of like what I actually will have a physical copy of. And then the other thing that's becoming, you know, an ever-growing problem is I'm really, for books that I love, like truly love, I now find myself seeking out like collector's editions of the books. And so I've started to acquire these, and started with Brandon Sanderson stuff because he at anniversaries of the publishing of his books, he'll release these beautiful leather bound with like color illustrations versions of them. And so that sent me down this path where I'm like, well, what else that I love could also have this amazing version? And it turns out several things. which cost several hundreds of dollars each. And so now I'm sort of like, what's that?
Your Fabergé egg collection.
Yes, exactly. I threw that shit away. Who cares anymore?
Garbage.
There are leather-bound things. And then I've also been doing the same with comic books, but seeking out the hardcover versions of them, if they exist, like collections of hardcover versions. So that I have to sort of figure out, but at least I've got plans to get a nice bookshelf that has a glass over it and a lock so that I can protect them.
Damn.
And also display them. But so that is where I'm at with things, with stuff, because I don't it's the only thing I acquire.
Okay. So this to me says that your living space, and you know, this also I'm sure it includes your wife in some way. Like, you know, this, so I guess my main question is like, what's your living space like status at in terms of like, do you feel you're sort of over your, like, is it difficult to sort of manage the stuff, or do you feel like that's actually not really a concern? Like you guys both sort of have that under control, and you know, whatever level of stuff you have, you're able to kind of like, does it feel overwhelming or does it just feel like fine?
That's interesting, you know, because Tiffany and I have very different approaches to this. And Tiffany acquires things to decorate with, and like she'll acquire furniture and she'll just be like, let's switch out this couch with this couch. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. What happens to the old couch?
She will typically sell them, you know, or give them to use furniture place or something like that, like a Goodwill.
Okay, so that's the strategy, yeah. I'm talking about. Like, so stuff she is
exchanges.
Moving.
She
out.
Makes exchanges.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so she's pretty there's good some about system that. Of like it's not mm-hmm. like a acquire. It's like a acquire and release. And so you're.
I still have to. I have to navigate her acquisitions, and she doesn't think about the placement of things so much in terms of place. She tends to think of it in terms of space. So she'll put something somewhere because there's a space for her to put it, rather than that being the place it belongs. And right. So it does happen sometimes that she'll put like a cactus in front of a light switch type thing. Right. And so that I have, you know, I've made peace with, because like, you know, generally she actually makes our home beautiful, and obviously I love her and all those sorts of things. But it's very interesting navigating her stuff. My stuff, I don't feel so much like I'm losing control of presently, but I do need more space for it.
Yeah. What about you, Emilio?
So when I was a kid, my mom sort of unofficially instituted this rule, and she told me about it. She said, you know, if you're going to bring something into the house of a certain volume, then you need to get rid of something of equal volume so that we're not accumulating things, right? Sort of similar to what you're saying with like swapping couches out, right, Christian? And this was never like a hard rule or anything, but I think she started that because I started kind of collecting all kinds of bullshit. And I was like, ooh, I want to buy these fucking turntables, and I want to buy these 3-foot tall speaker systems, and like, you know. And so my problem is that I've had all these hobbies over the years that require like having things, and I'm like, my interest wanes very quickly, and I'm like, ooh, I'm really into DJing for the next 3 weeks. And now I'm not into it anymore, but I have all this DJ equipment now that I like acquired. So this was me in my like teens and 20s living at home. And in the last, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 years, I've started to really love the process of purging and getting rid of shit. And now to the point where like in the last year or so, I've gotten rid of so much of my shit. And it feels so good. And I really just have, in terms of my stuff, the stuff that I want and that I need, I have two, like, sort of, I don't know, 2-foot by 1-foot plastic bins that I have, like, mementos in. like, you know, yearbooks or, you know, diplomas, whatever. And that is the extent. And I sort of have this, you know, unwritten rule that that is it. Those are the boxes for like memorabilia, and I will not collect anything else beyond what's in those two boxes. And if I want to get something new, that, you know, I have to get rid of something from one of those boxes. And that's been working great. And I just got rid of a bunch of clothes recently that I don't wear anymore. And like, I'm like, why the fuck am I keeping these clothes in my closet? They you know, I don't use these anymore. And it's the best feeling ever. I love it. So good. It's so nice. It's so nice to purge it. And I've been able to like let go of sentimentality around things in almost everything I have.
Wow.
And I love that feeling because it gives you this freedom to say, you know what, you know, this, you know, and sorry, Christian, to pick on your example, but I'm going to use it because you said it, like this book I read and I loved, you know what, like I haven't, it's covered in dust and I haven't looked at it in 7 years, to the Goodwill.
Like, oh, my heart.
Yes.
This signed collector's edition that I was given to by the author because my family was friends with them and it's a single copy, it goes to the Goodwill.
To the Goodwill.
Oh my God.
And it's the best. And to have that sense of freedom is so nice for me.
I love it. Oh my God, I'm so sentimental.
Starting that process, which, because I used to be very sentimental, I used to hold on to everything. Starting that process years ago and now like sort of feeling like I do that regularly is a great feeling. And I even now am like, I noticed this about myself recently. I'm like, ooh, what sentimental thing can I get rid of next? I'm like looking for things that have meaning, sentimental meaning, value, and trying to get rid of them and be like, ooh, I want to purge more shit. Like, I want to purge more. Maybe that's not a good impulse. I don't know what that says.
Yikes.
But you're a monster.
You are a monster.
It feels so good. It feels so good. I'm going to come to your house and get rid of all your shit too, Christian.
Oh my God, no. Yes. I'm never inviting you over.
I'm on my way. You don't need this crap. But the other side of that is that my wife and son are both have like strong attachments to their things. Mm. And I think I mentioned last podcast that like we each have our own rooms, our own bedrooms. So my room is like my clothes and my work shit. And some junk that needs to be gotten rid of, but, you know, just like a few little things here and there. Their rooms are full of books and boxes and little trinkets and paintings and whatever. And I don't...
He says dismissively.
With disdain. And I go in their rooms and I spit.
Full of all the things in their lives.
All these things. These horrible things that control them.
Spitting venom. Yeah. Spitting venom.
And the funny thing is, like, right, my wife's room is so full of stuff that, like, she had trouble, like, kind of moving around in her room. And it was, like, not to the point of, like, a hoarder episode, right? But, like,
oh dear.
She was like, ooh, I have too much stuff. And she got rid of a bunch of stuff so she could walk through to her desk and shit. Like,
So what's the living space? Like the stuff that's not shared? Because I think that actually makes a lot of sense, having these sort of separate spaces and you can kind of control your own.
Yeah.
But what about like the shared space?
Mm. We have like two shelves. You know, we have one like big wall shelf that has a bunch of books and mementos from travel on it. And that's, I love that shelf. Nice. It's very cool. Yeah. And then we have a bookshelf that has like, we have like two bookshelves that have like games and puzzles and like a bunch of my son's like random sort of like building kits that he had. And just like a couple days ago, my wife went through and like purged all of those old building sets because he hasn't used them in a while. And so... we're going to rearrange that. We do a lot of rearranging of our like living spaces. I personally love rearranging a room. even if you know the layout is good, I'm like, oh fuck it, let's put the desk over there and see what happens. Let's move this couch over here and see what happens. I love doing that, and I'll do it every 6 months if I can, and just try different arrangements, see what it feels like.
Tiffany's like that. She'll like also like switch out furniture, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. She just wants to like change it up, and I'm just like, I'm often sort of like, ugh, okay. And then after I'm like, oh yeah, this is great, because I'm immediately just, I'm going to bond with whatever the sort of setup is, so long as it stays that way for as long as it possibly can.
It also requires like a certain level of, like, your house has to be in pretty good shape to be able to move around all the furniture, in my opinion. Like,
how do you mean?
Yeah.
Like, so like, the reason I'm kind of bringing this topic up is that like we have kind of an issue with it, and I you know, I have in the past, and I think I'm much more on the sort of like purge train now, where I'm kind of like realizing some of the benefits and trying to catch myself on stuff. And you know, I don't tend to acquire a ton, but just as a family of four, like, we naturally bring in stuff, and the kids have hobbies in a similar way, Emilio, to you. You know, it's like we have all these roller skating things, and you know, we, there's just stuff that we have, ice skates and roller skates and all the stuff that goes with it. And you know, it's like it adds up over time, and they're toys, and they play with a lot of, anyway, there's a lot. And when it gets bad at our house, it gets real bad. And like, there's like a room we can't go in, like all our closets. And like, so it gets to this point where it's like, to be able to rearrange the furniture and move stuff around is a little, it's like, it feels like we can't do that until we've done some work, like getting things in the right place and moving stuff, you know, just kind of getting to a basic level. And that's kind of like, I guess like part of the reason I'm asking is like, so what's your actual strategy? Like, you just bring stuff to the Goodwill, Emilio, and they like, the thing is, the Goodwill here doesn't take, we don't have any place to donate. Mm-hmm. And there's no trap, there's no like dump that we can take our stuff to that will, besides like putting it actually in a trash bag, which like I just can't quite throw away non-broken items, like most of the time. Some of the time I can, but like really good, nice items, like if I can't donate them, I just, I'm not quite at the level where I can just throw them in the trash right now. So I have a real problem not being able to donate. So we can drive like an hour and a half and like drop it off at a Goodwill somewhere else. But like, is the Goodwill sort of the main place where you get rid of stuff?
Yes. We take a lot of stuff to Goodwill, but the other thing is we, and I don't know how feasible this is in your area, but we put stuff on, you know, Craigslist or OfferUp or FreeCycle, right? Like any of these websites. Or we just fucking throw it out on the curb and someone takes it, right? But you guys are like in the middle of the woods, so like it's not an option, I think.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that, and we have gotten rid of stuff like that, but it just doesn't work for like, it doesn't work. It's a lot of work to do, to post things and to pick, you know, it's like for the amount of stuff that we're trying to get rid of, usually it's like doesn't really function.
Well, the other day I cleaned out my garage. This was an awesome purge. This was one of my best purges because my garage was a total mess, and I had all.
Wait, it's not just the purge that's great, right? It's like the space afterwards.
Yes, you know, 5 months ago or whatever, 4 months ago. I still go into the garage now, and I'm like, ah,
it's so good.
It feels so nice. But I had accumulated all this woodworking stuff because I was really into woodworking like 4, 5, 6 years ago. I was doing all these projects. I had all this lumber piled up. I had all these tools. And finally, like whenever I did this a few months ago, I was like, you know what? I haven't touched all this stuff in a while. If I want to do another woodworking project, I will just go and buy the wood for it. I don't need to store lumber in my house constantly. And a lot of these tools I don't need. And so I just like, you know, my son and I, we took a day and we just hauled everything out onto the curb, and then I took a picture of it all.
Curb, yep.
And I posted it.
Les is like, yes, I remember.
The curb, yes. Right. So we have this option because we live in the, you know, in the burbs or whatever. I took a picture of it all, and I put it on some website. I don't remember which one. Maybe OfferUp. And I was like, hey, this is all free. Come and get it, or it's going to the dump tomorrow. And sure enough, you know, seven people hit me up. They came and picked it all up. It was all gone within like 7 hours.
Wow.
And my garage was clean and empty, and it all went somewhere. I don't know where it went, but
someone used it, probably.
Someone took it,
which was great.
Yeah. Or they put it in their garage and it's going to sit there for another 8 years, but like, you know, whatever. At least it's out of my garage, I guess.
We can do that even in Missoula. Like, we do all of the above. We do Goodwill, we do Marketplace and Craigslist, and we do, you know, at times, like, this is on the sidewalk at this address, come and get it.
Mm-hmm.
And we tend to be able to get rid of most of our stuff that we want to get rid of that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, you poor guy. I mean, you might, well, I don't know. You were saying maybe things like Marketplace and Craigslist are...
Well, yeah, I mean, those exist. And I will say, like, I've gotten rid of stuff like that for sure, but it has to be like kind of on the good end. Like, and then even then it's like, I cannot just the amount of time I've wasted, like I'm giving away something free and I've got to have this, like, you know, 7-thread conversation with these people about it.
Here's this thing on the curb.
I know, which I do, but the problem is, it's just sometimes people, you know, people just don't get it. People don't come and get it.
Don't
and
talk so to
it's
those like, people.
Okay, so
yeah.
I'll tell you what I'm reduced to.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Very shameful. Very shameful.
Oh,
I now have a shelf.
He sinks it in the lake that he lives on. he just weighed it down. And you put a net over it, and it's just at the bottom of the lake.
What's that song you sing as you dump it in the lake? It's like,
it's very, very soulful, though, whatever it is. I give it a salute, and then down it goes. Another barrel.
You should be ashamed, Laz. You are correct to have shame.
So I have a shelf in my shed now, which is behind me right now.
Okay.
This is to me a good system, except for the last part. So I fill my shelf with just throughout the day, throughout, you know, whatever the week, I'll find things that I think they can go, like they should be donated or sold. And I don't know which yet. So I just keep it on this one sort of large shelf. And then I have been paying somebody $60 to come and take everything on the shelf and never speak to me again.
Wow.
So regardless of whether they are good
just
things,
throwing it in the trash.
I
just take it to the dump,
sort of
dude.
Hoped they might just take it. But the thing is, there's no dump around here. There's nowhere to take it. So I'm hoping
they just find a dumpster somewhere.
Like this is not. Woods. Yeah. Well,
oh no. They are waving it down and throwing it into the lake.
Oh God. So it's really like, I feel like I'm at my wit's end with like, I need to get rid of stuff.
To.
I don't know quite what to do. So I'm just paying people to take it and make it their problem.
So
and I'm like,
great.
I'm hoping that these people don't have like hoarding issues.
Oh my God.
And I'm just like, I'm just feeding their addiction by giving them money and stuff. And just,
oh
like,
my God.
But I'm hoping that they're like, okay, this is great. I need this for my family. And like this stuff, you could probably sell the stuff on the shelf for like, I don't know, $100 or something like that. If you had the time and the effort and you weren't, you know, far away from everywhere. The other thing is our Craigslist, we are in a Craigslist desert because we have Worcester Craigslist, which is an hour away. And we have New Hampshire Craigslist, which is the whole state above us. And there's nothing in between. So we don't really have, our Craigslist has like, it just doesn't function in a reasonable way because everybody who contacts me says, oh, I didn't realize how far you were. And then I never hear from them again.
So, oh, man.
That is amazing.
I don't know.
That's so sad.
Why do you have to pay them? Why can't they just take it?
Because I don't know. I offered people to take it before and it's like, I don't need all that stuff. They'll take some of it. And I'm like, you know what? No, don't make that decision. For $60, you take the shelf. and then they're fine with it. And like, it's good stuff. There's good stuff in there. It's like, I've Surely. Given away like $100 appliances.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, it's so good. Wow. Buddy, I'm sorry.
I'm working on it. It's a process, but the shed was a big deal. And my like for stipulation for the shed for myself and, you know, for the whole family, but like, this is like, we cannot have this shed and just fill it with junk and then continue to fill our house with, like, it can't be just another place that just gets full and unusable. Mm. Like, it's just not going to happen. So that's why this like extreme measure of like having a donation shelf that we pay someone to clear out for us like every month or something like that is like, so it's a battle, and I'm like, I'm gonna win this battle, but it's gonna be a long struggle, and I gotta find some way to get rid of stuff that's easier than what I'm doing.
It really comes down to the setting that you are in, because dang, like if you're just in an area where like you live on a street,
I know, I just put this stuff outside on the curb, and it'd be gone.
Like,
I wouldn't even have to put up a
You don't even live
post.
On a street.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
There's no sidewalks. No, I mean, curb.
So I should say I do put some stuff outside. But usually what happens is I'll leave a bunch of stuff outside, and then after about a week, I take half of it back in. And it's usually like destroyed by rain, you know? So it's like, it just sits out there too long. It does get some of it, which is good, but it's just not as good. It's not a complete solution.
Man.
That is tough. I mean,
time to move.
And
leave everything behind, by the way. Just leave it. Just leave it all. It all stays with the house.
Yeah. And then I just sink the house in the lake. Give it a salute. God. Down it goes.
Amazing.
That's great. Well, all right. Should I do mine?
Yeah. I hope it's about. Let's do it. Marie Kondo.
Nope. Another departure, I will say. So first, an update, and this will segue into my topic. I have bought a plot in the Missoula City Cemetery.
Hey!
Whoa! There we go.
There we go. Talk with Christian.
That's right. With Christian in the dick. So I bought a grave plot. This was after doing, you know, some degree of research on cemeteries in the region. I'll say I went on Reddit, asked people sort of, you know, what they think the most beautiful graveyards are, cemeteries are in Western Montana, and I got some answers from the Missoula Reddit and that kind of thing. For all the ones that were in town, I visited them because I have a few options. It's so funny, you know, I can be buried in a regular cemetery, or I could actually be buried in a veterans cemetery if I wanted to.
Yep.
Which is interesting. If you guys have ever been to one, there are these extremely uniform cemeteries.
Hmm. We have several of those in San Diego.
Okay. Yeah, of course you would. Yeah. But very well maintained.
Hmm.
So I eventually settle on Missoula City Cemetery. And I decide, like, okay, if this is what I'm going to, you know, be buried in, you know, I really want to know kind of like, what's its plan in the coming years, and like what's going to happen to it over time, and because there's like residential development nearby, and it's actually like to the south of it is like a whole train depot, and also like somebody was saying that maybe they'd have a main road go through it to the highway.
What? Okay.
So I seek out information on this, and I'm somehow able to find the strategic planning document that was developed for the Missoula City Cemetery about 3 years ago by like a graveyard or cemetery consultant group out of New York. So I read that, And then I go to look at the cemetery and I have like a number of questions about like what recommendations from the strategic planning document they're going to take or not.
Yep. Did they have any idea what you were talking about?
They did. Okay. They did. Nice. I mean, I took a tour with the the director of the cemetery, like head or something like that. I don't know what his name is, but he's the guy who is in charge of it. It's owned by the city of Missoula. And so then I have him take me out to show me some of the places I was wondering about, and I'm asking these questions. He's telling me about these updates they're going to be doing, and then he's like, "Well, you know, there is also," because he's showing me these places in the new part of the cemetery. They're pretty empty. The old part of the cemetery, and this is a cemetery from the late 1800s, like has lots of trees, and it's like, it's not like perfect. It's just like it grew, it's organic, it's sort of got this beauty to it and poetry, and you see these sort of like eras of, you know, headstones, and it's really interesting when you sort of get into it. So he's showing me these new areas that have available plots, and then I'm asking all these questions, and he says, "Well, you know, there is one plot left in the old part of the cemetery." And it's not listed for purchase. It's, you know, not advertised as a spot. But you've been asking all these questions, and, you know, it seems like you really care about this. And so would you like to take a look at that one? And I'm like, yes! Yes!
Wow.
And we go into the old part of the cemetery, and it's this like, oh, it's beautiful. It's at a crossroads, and it's like next to people who died in the 1920s. Oh, wow. So exciting.
Huh. Yeah, it sounds like perfect from what you were talking about before.
Oh, I'm just thrilled about it. So I get that, and it's great. The plot can have one cremated remains and one buried person, and Tiffany doesn't know what she wants. So, you know I do want to be cremated, so we could both be there. And so it's really exciting. And then as we're sort of wrapping up, I ask them about the Missoula Cemetery Board, which of course I've become aware of in my research.
You are now part of, you're the chairperson.
So I asked, like, how do you get on the board? And so then he's like, "Well, actually, we do. We just had an opening." Because I'm like, "Oh, how often do you meet?" He's like, "Quarterly." And so they had just actually met, and somebody was finishing up their term. And I'm like, "Oh, can you get me?" Yeah. So obviously, you know, you already called it, but fast forward, I've applied.
Are you guys familiar with the term hostile takeover? No. Okay. Never mind. It's just a question.
Cool. I did actually write in my application my three priorities for the Missoula City Cemeteries.
Oh yeah.
Nice.
Which are and they're important. One is being able to do green burials and kind of related practices. Mm-hmm. So that people can be buried sort of, you know, just in pine and, you know, cement, and, you know, they degrade, you know, with the soil.
Yep.
Things like that. And then I want there to be more integration with the recreation system in Missoula. So like some running paths or biking paths could go through the cemetery so that people can be kind of feel more like it's part of their world. Nice. And then the third one is actually to have a social media presence, because they don't really, and mm-hmm. it'd be nice to have an Instagram that tells like stories of, you know, infamous or famous people buried there, because they actually do some stuff with that in the community otherwise, but nobody knows about it. Like, they'll have people dress up in old-timey clothing and tell the stories of these people. That's which cool. I'd never heard of.
Yeah. How would you?
Exactly. There's no social media presence. No, so that's my
you have to
priority.
Be hanging out at the cemetery that day.
It's crazy. It's like, and how are you going to hang out there if there's no running path that like gets you there on a regular basis? So anyway, so I'm hoping that I will be joining That'll be joining the cemetery committee.
Yes.
Or board.
Yes.
Nice.
How much did this podcast influence you in making this decision?
Well, you know, what's great is it's just become a forum for my thoughts on parenting and death.
Yeah.
So it's been helpful to talk it out. But I'll tell you, this is actually not my topic.
No.
It segues into my topic, which is I think I have something of a compulsion around if there's something that I'm really interested in, really like, sort of finding a way to like steer the direction it takes or be involved in steering the direction it takes. So like, you know, in my job, like I'm a, you know, subject matter expert in the, you know, subset of mental health services that I do. Like I'm a subject matter expert in that. And so like over the course of 5 years of being at my current employer, like I was like, okay, I'd like to be the supervisor of this, and then I'd like to go to the next level of it and do that sort of thing. And I like make that very clear. And then I go and I do that, right? So now I'm in charge of it for the whole state. And to a degree, like I have an authority over the region of this country as well, in this area.
Yep.
And I can't, and like it's hard for me to imagine like joining things like a parent-teacher association and not feeling like I need to like find a way to steer it in a direction that is, you know, going to be as mutually beneficial as possible, but in my own sort of, you know, to my own liking. Mm-hmm. Mostly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I'm just like, how does this factor for you guys? How do you do this? Like, do you like find that you want roles like that in things that you like, or is that something that's never occurred to you, or do you find it and you're like, no, that would be crazy and here are the reasons why, like, or do you have this problem to some degree as well? Like, I'm just curious what you guys have for experiences around this, if any.
In one of my recent jobs, like maybe 4 years ago, I was doing a lot of fundraising. I do fundraising in general for a lot of my jobs, mostly grant writing. But they were training me to do more individual fundraising, which meant a lot of like one-on-one conversations with donors, you know, trying to sort of woo people and bring them in. And I'm generally good at that because I'm friendly and likable and I can talk and whatever. But I'm doing these trainings and they're like, you know, we're going over these scripts, and the people, the consultants who are training me are like, you need to say these 5 points. You need to really make sure you hit these things. And I'm failing miserably, and I can't do it. And we're doing these role plays, and I suck at it. And they're like, Emilio, you are not good at this because you are not good at having an agenda in a conversation. And I was like, holy shit, you're right. And I actually like that about myself, in that, like,
sure,
so I think that to answer your question, I don't tend to have an agenda when I approach these sorts of situations. I don't feel like I have a plan moving forward. I think I mentioned before, like, you know, on this podcast, how like in most of my jobs, I feel like I'm kind of just a leaf in the wind. I'm sort of flowing with whatever's happening. So I do not have that thing that you have, Christian. And I do notice that about you, and I admire that about you, because I don't have that at all. And I think I've talked about this in our D&D games too, right? Like, you know, you have a direction that you want us to go in, and you're so good at like sort of steering us in a direction. And I don't do that in my games. I'm just like, well, what do you guys want to do? Okay, well, I guess I'll just make some shit up, right? I think we're very different in that way.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, like, it's when I'm in, and I try, it's like, I feel like that I mostly want this in sort of like areas of my life that are the professional areas, and I wish for it to be less in the social areas, but something like D&D is an interesting quasi sort of thing. But anyway, like, try to keep it out of there, but in like professional settings or professional adjacent settings, it's really hard for me when I observe that people who are in charge have the wrong principles or the wrong approach or like no approach or like, you know, like they don't, or they're just not effective at what they do. Like, and I come into places where people are that way and it's like, oh great, how lovely to like be presented with competence. But like there are settings where you require somebody to be competent and there is not that person or not enough of those people in order for the power of that organization to be properly leveraged towards its goals. And so like if I see that and it's something that I care about, I'm like, well, how do I apply?
So you talking about that, like I think I second Emilio that I really appreciate that about your approach, because I legitimately wish there were more people who were their head is in the right place and who felt like that. Like that's like when that happens, like you said, I'm sure you come across people and when they're doing it right, you're just like, thank God someone's doing this right.
Yes.
It's such a relief. Yes. And I've come across plenty of those situations and I'm just like, yes, thank you. Like, I'm glad someone's doing it. But I do not. So while you were talking about it, I was trying to think, because it's not something I've really thought about that much, like what my role in that is. I know that I don't. So I can actually give an example from today. Mm. I am assistant coach for the softball team for my daughter's softball. And I helped last year. I wasn't officially an assistant coach at first, but then I just helped out because I was like, you know what? Nobody's doing the pitching. And like, you need to have people practice pitching or else they're going to get up. Like the kids have to pitch at this level. So like, if nobody is teaching them how. So I was like, you know what? I'm here. I think I'll enjoy it. So I helped.
Yeah.
And that was fine. But what I didn't do and what I think I actively avoid is I did not want to be the head coach. Even though they set the agenda and they, as in the role of the head coach, you have much more control over that. I don't want that responsibility if it's not like a situation where I'm just like, oh, this is obviously what I need to do. Like my preference would be to have someone there who's doing a good job and to help them do that job. And so that's kind of where and I've had that, you know, professionally. I was trying to think what my, cause I have some compulsion too, where I don't tend to go along with the way things are going.
Yeah.
And I don't tend to, like, I tend to do my own thing. And I think what it is, I'm not, if I do something like, if I'm seeing something in an organization, I'm just making this up right now in my head. I haven't really thought about this, but I think what I'm doing, my goal is to get what I want out of it personally. I want to either learn something from the experience, or in this case with softball, I just want to help. Like it's not, I don't have a bigger goal of like, I need, you know, I want the league to do this or this, or teach pitch, you know, do pitching differently in this moment. I want to get out of it. Like, I'd like to help these kids learn how to do this so that they can get confident. And like at work, if I take on a job or I take on a position or I take on a client or a project, it's like, what am I going to get out of this? Whether it's just like money or it's like in this situation, I can help build this particular thing. And that's what I'm interested in right now. And like, so I think there's a certain element of just like, what is this going to sort of accomplish? And so on that level, there's like a little bit of a compulsion there where it's like, I've done things that maybe I shouldn't have signed. I don't know. It's like maybe outside of my realm of comfort or whatever it is, but like something is pushing me towards that because like I do tend to think in the bigger picture, long term, like what do I want my life to look like in 5 years or 10 years or whatever. And so I am always kind of pushing in those things, even if I'm not quite comfortable there to move in that direction. But it, when it comes to like, if I see the PTA or something, like that's the last, I'm like, I have too many things on my plate that I have. I have, like, I want to do the book. I want to do the podcast. I want to do this project. I want to do this like side website. Like I have these list of things, and every time I think of adding something else to that, I'm like putting it up against all these other sort of things that I want to accomplish sort of in my own head, in my own picture of what I want to do. So, yes, I don't know.
Yeah. You know, when I get into these situations, I'm like, here's something, but it's when I care about it. Right. So, the cemetery thing, for example, I care about it. So I'm like, all right, well, let me look into this situation. Right. And I think when I get into this situation, the motivator in this one is intrinsic, is I just want this, whatever it is, to be the best version of it. And
which is awesome.
And I'm like, can we just do that? Or like, what do you need to do that? Mm-hmm. Or who do I need to like bring in here to do that? Like,
but I think my sister is like that. Like she sees a situation, my oldest sister, Angelica, she tends, and sometimes she gets kind of crap from people like, oh, like she was trying to take over the thing. But like, it's like the fact of the matter is, like, if she sees a situation, she does have a good eye for how it could work in a really sort of efficient, good, clear way. Mm-hmm. And she moves in and she helps. And, you know, at first she tries to just help. And then if things aren't, you know, then maybe she'll step up and she'll volunteer to do this and she'll organize. And it's like, everyone's better off for it. It's like a great thing. And I really admire that about her. I think it's cool.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, that's the whole thing. It has to be like, if you're gonna be a person who does that, in order to not be like the most hated person, it has to be guided by like, you know, mass like beneficence. It's like, all right, everybody here is gonna be in a better situation.
Yeah.
If we can work together to move toward these sorts of directions, right? Like if it's not that, then it's like, okay, it's bad.
Yeah. And like,
it's a bad thing.
And you do get those bad versions of it from other people.
True.
I'm not going to say altruistic because that's not, you know, maybe that's not the right term for it, but like you get other people who are specifically like they see some benefit to themselves to be head of something. And like whatever that reason is, they just want that. Yeah. And like, that's the worst possible. So when you get people who are like legitimately thinking about the organization as a whole and like, you know, people who can see how the different pieces might fit together so that everyone is happy. Like, and it's not like a zero sum game. It's like there are situations where it's like, this could be running like a nice, smoothly, like nice, well-oiled machine with these
everybody here could
in
be
place.
Happy.
Like, and why not? Like, why aren't? Yeah. So I think about
everyone
this all the time.
Everyone here could be happy.
Yeah, I think about this with work because I have this one client who just thinks I'm cheating him, and like, it's unbelievable. Like, they think I'm like a crook and like ripping them off at every turn. And I'm just like, we could live such a happy life here. Like, we could just work together. There's no reason to have this. Like, we don't need to have these arguments. We don't need to ignore. Like, it's just like, why? Why are we doing this?
I don't know. Oh, that must suck.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Jeez. So devaluing.
I'm really drawn, Christian, to people like you who sort of have this bigger picture vision, and because I often can see the flaws in the system, but I don't have an idea of how to fix it, or maybe I see a way to fix it, but I'm like, I'm not gonna fucking do that. Like, that's a lot of work, right? But if someone else is like, hey, I see the flaws in the system too, and I know how to fix it, I'm like, oh shit, let's do this together. I will be your fucking right hand man. Like, I'm a great lieutenant, but I don't want to be in charge of this shit. Like, because I don't, I can't hold the responsibility well, right? Like, and actually, this is the reason that I work so well with my partner at like my nonprofit, who has now we've started two nonprofits together, and he is the guy who is like able to sort of hold the position of leadership and be in power and like kind of, you know, see all the chess pieces. And then I'm the guy who can be like, okay, I can work on this and I can plug in here and I can fix this problem and like, you know, sort of help him sort things out. And you know we can rely on each other in that way, but I know I'm at the end of the day, like, you're in charge of this. I don't want to be in charge of anything. I just want to support and help and plug in where I can. And that's what I'm good at, you know? And I think you and I have worked that way in certain projects as well.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I wish I had in my professional life, people like you. Because I kind of like do, but not really, and not like as much as I need them to be, like, you know, like just not quite there. Like, and I can build people up and build them into that. And that's a lot of what my work is, you know, is personnel management. And it's like, just how do I make this person, you know, the best version of their professional selves, right? It's like, it scales up and it scales down. And that person who's like the perfect right hand person has not yet emerged for me, which is sort of like, I have somebody who's like really competent and capable, but is not quite able to anticipate what it is that I need. And she's my deputy. She's really good, really capable, but like we're not quite on the same wavelength in that way.
Yeah, that takes time, I think, to get there too. Like,
yeah, I'm working on that. I believe it's possible.
Yeah, I would say this in this last year working with this friend of mine is the first time that I feel like I'm at that level where, like, you know, we've worked together for a long time, and I've often sort of felt like I've fallen short on like kind of what he needs from me. But this past year, I'm like, oh shit, I see it. Like, I need to jump in and do this and do this and like take this off his plate, you know, before he even asks me to. Right. And it's like, ooh, this is a great, man, this feels really good. You know, like know, to have that sense, you know, to feel that way.
I can only imagine. Oh, that's amazing.
But yeah, it took a while to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's my topic. Gentlemen's.
Man,
yeah, I think my only time sort of taking on something big like that and really like forcing my own leadership onto it was with the casino stuff. Like, I volunteered, and then it just felt like there was nobody stepping up, and I sort of knew what to do, and that was that it felt a little, it wasn't a natural fit, I don't think, like. I was able to do it, and I ended up being the regional director for the whole like Boston area, Boston, Cambridge, Somerville area, and which just meant, you know, like organizing like it was probably 15 to 20 volunteers, and then, you know, collecting everything and setting it was, but it was, I mean, unbelievable, a ton of work, and I think I was the only reason it worked, the only reason I was able to do it was because there was such hard numbers for what needed to be done. And I could see the path. Like, we had to collect a certain amount of signatures, and it was just a matter of, like, you know, doing the work, getting other people to do the work. Like, it was like just doing a clear. Yeah, and I really felt that if we hit that number and like got it on the ballot, that it would, you know, that at that point, if people got a chance to vote, that's all I wanted. You know, it was like one of those things where it's like, okay. If it just happens on its own. So there was like a certain element of like, I'd never felt that I could have an impact before. And so in this moment, it was like, well, okay, if I actually take on this role, like, and I get all these people to do all this stuff, it will actually make that impact. And so it was like knowing that the outcome was actually possible You know, and eventually the vote lost, so that was too bad. But the important part to me was that there was a vote, and that was the part that like kept me going in a role that I didn't feel that natural about. Like I was, it didn't. I don't really enjoy trying to motivate people, trying to call people and get them to do stuff and ask them, and it just isn't. It's not generally my thing. Like if people want to do stuff, I'm happy to. I'm always like to participate, and you know. Boost up other people, but for the most part, being the one who's organizing it and sending all the emails, that's like tough.
Yeah.
Oh man, I love calling people up for congratulations. I love it so much. Like, because you know, the VA is a giant bureaucracy. Yeah. And it's like sometimes you don't know anything about like what some other area is doing. And then you find out that there's like overlap and you're like, okay, like, you know, like let's figure out how this process can work better so that we both have an easier time of it. I'm like, I love that conversation.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
The way you're framing the conversation, it sounds better than, you know, I mean, honestly, it's like that is better, but like still being that person who's got to sort of, who like at the end of the day has to get the other people on board. Yeah. And if they don't get on board, then you're sort of stuck doing a lot of the other stuff or just not getting it done. Like that's just a tough position to be in. And I'm always happy to help other people who are in that tough position, but I don't necessarily want it to be me.
Well, you have to have a vision. That's what it is. It's like you have to be able to articulate a vision and the reason why that is so important is because I have found so many people do not have visions that they bring to the work that they do necessarily. And they don't view themselves, they don't necessarily always recognize themselves as the important part of their sort of area that they are, that they actually are. They lose sight of that because they're not connected to the big picture. And so when you can talk to them and remind them of the big picture and articulate that to them and help them understand their role in the bigger picture, like it's so edifying and it goes a long fucking way toward getting people.
That's what got interested. Me to do it was some guy who John Ribeiro called me up and told me the big picture, and I was like, oh yeah, you're right, that's totally true. I'm in.
There you go You get it. Yep. You seen it.
Yep.
Also, I will say that joining the board is, if it comes together, it's my teeniest, tiniest, littlest, like dipping my toe into like a political area thing that I could think of, one that's like, if I look at this and, you know, do some stuff, I could either just do that and nobody would care and I could just be left alone hanging out doing that, or like maybe there's something else that seems interesting or some other group of people that I should be talking to help them move this thing to do that instead and whatever. Like, and it's like, oh, maybe that's, you know, some service in that way.
Christian, you're going to be the governor of Montana in 4 years.
4 years. That's like such a short timeline.
You're going to be the governor at the next election.
Whatever the next election is. You started this path, and I know you, so it's just a matter of time.
Oh, man. I keep on thinking, like, all right, I'm in my early 40s, and yeah, I guess, like, that stuff doesn't really happen for people until they're in their 50s and sometimes their 60s. Yeah, and I'm like, oh, I mean, in that way, I suppose like there's still plenty of time to like consider that. And, you know, I'm a doctor, I'm a professional, I've served the community. Like, you know, there are things that are, you know, I'm a fucking military service member.
Like, yeah, you've got all the credentials, man. <It's>
ludicrous.
Yeah, 4 years. You've been busy these last 10 years. Holy crap.
I have been busy. I've been a busy little bee. A very busy little bee. Scheming. I've been floating this out to my staff sometimes in conversation. I'm like, because I'll be like, oh, what if we do this and this and like we could get it, and they're like, and then they're like, huh, interesting. I'm like, yeah, you know, ABS, always be scheming. And it's like, you know, ABS, y'all.
Well, all right, should we call it?
I think that's it.
Yeah, that was great.
Hey,
think we're good.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
What is the name of this episode? What was it again? It was exercise-induced asthma and dick. And dick.
I think that's it.
Nice.
We're talking Mormon awesome basketball today name. On it. On I can't even say it. Exercise-induced asthma and dick.
And dick.
And then, of course, the other thing.
Oh, great. All right. I'm going to stop the thing.
Yeah. All right.